So, it's 1:30, so we should be able to begin, but I think I wait a couple of minutes until we get three more people in the room. I hope so. Okay, so what is this? Why did that disappear? Okay, it comes now. So this is the model. Have you achieved the same model? Do you have the same model now? You too, BI? Yes, the graph, we can make a similar. What about you? You are together. Okay. We make the graph together. So you click on the input output object. You see when you are pointing here, it comes up. Input output object. Click on that. Click somewhere.
That's how mine looks, that thing.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay. And then you put the output to workbench tool here. There are no levels as such, so here it's empty. You click on the auxiliary, you see here the pulse function selected. And then you still have to select here in the bottom how to show that. You select the graph, okay, and then you have it here. And then when you simulate, you get the same thing as here. Okay, so we can now eliminate it. And when you have this, you could, in principle, simulate here on the automatically simulate on change. If you do that, then you see you can change the height, but we are going to leave it the same. But you can change the time step here. So at the moment is 0:25. Let's click on that, put it to 1. Then you see the height goes down 200. And what should be a line, the very thin line, looks a little bit strange now. Why? Because Vensim is inaccurate. It has a width of one step one, and it goes up and down, and that's why it looks like a not that real line. It looks like a triangle. If we now take as a time step half of it, 0.5, then the outcome, the height for the pulse function, which is not the pulse that is inside, the pulse function, which is affected by this height, will double because we need the same, it will give the same area. So it should be 200, but the thickness should be half. And that is what it does.
How did you get the slider?
When you simulate on change here, not with this, but with this one, the slider comes immediately. So not the running man to the left, but the running man against a background. Click on that, and here you can put any time. Every time you click on time step on the corner, you can put a value. Now we put 0.0125, which is 1/8. The height should be now 800. Okay, no, I put 1 0 too much. I put 1 0 too much. So now, 0.125. The height is 100. And the width is still the same because we multiply 100, the height here, 800, with the width, which is 1/8. I get always the same area. And that's the point with constructing this pulse function. It should be the same. If I now make the Stein step, click here, 1/10 of that, putting 1 0 more, then the height should jump to 8,000, 10 times as much, which it does. Sorry, I'm getting a thought here. Okay? So that makes sense. Okay? Then we leave this. And I would like now to do the following. We have this model that we built in the previous hour. Now I am going to show you the same model, but using the Vensim function. And that is expected security delays with delay function. And that is this one. Where you can see that I have a pulse actually there, inside. Let me modify this by putting here in the average, in the security incidence. No, okay. No, wait a moment. It is correct. The problem is I have to run it. First, the base. And then the other current. Otherwise, it is just the same model. But I don't need the whole thing because I'm using the delay function. Let's see it here. Expected security incidents. There you see. I'm using the function smooth. Remember I told you that I could use smooth? Smooth. Okay. I'm going to use both. Smooth gives the same result as and see I'm lazy, I copy here and put delay 1. So if I put here delay 1, okay, and simulate, I get the same result. Okay, the point, the only thing is that I have current. And then you can experiment as well as before. Actually, we don't need these sliders here because when I simulate on this, I get sliders here. And you can do the same things as before, and so on and so on. So this is also a solution of the same problem, but it is simplified in that instead of I put in the whole thing with the gap and the stock, I am putting just the delay function. This you find in Fronter. Any questions? Okay, Then let's go to the third order delay. You miss several things, Shaitan. To show you a third order delay, I'm going to put this in front here and just explain what this is. You are seeing here a description of a situation in a consultant company. In this consultant company, they are hiring people. In the left, you see hiring. They are hiring them and they enter. And they will be trained for 1 year. So they have got 100 fresh candidates from this institution. And they have to convert into consultants, so you need still some training. So they put them on a training course. And when they pass the course, they become junior consultants. That is what is being shown there. Here, the same applies as for you. You enter at the same time and leave at the same time. So, which kind of delay is it when you are training people? Which kind of delay did we say it was? Was it first order? Was it third order? Was it the delay fix? Delay fix. Exactly. So that's what happens there. And then they become junior consultants. Some of them will be promoted quickly, some others slower. And they are in the first, we call it first intermediate stage. Then some of them are promoted to a second intermediate stage. And then finally, some of them are promoted to senior consultants. Actually, some come fast, others slow. And there are some averages time to reach the first stage, the second, and the third, and so on. Now, if you look at the transition from junior consultants to first intermediate stage, to second intermediate stage, to senior consultants, there are three stages. So this is a third order delay. And I am going to show you, this is built up as such. Later I show you the same problem, but with the delay function, so we don't need all the details. So if you simulate, then you see here the whole story. Here at point zero, we have a pulse, and we get the guys trained. 1 year later, a new pulse, they leave school. And then those that were junior consultants start disappearing because they are being promoted. We get a wave, green, of the first intermediate stage here. It increases to a maximum and then decays. We get a new wave for the second intermediate stage later, which is this one, and then it decays. And in the end, some sooner, other later, they become senior consultants. So this, the senior consultants one, the curve that is dark gray, is a third order delay of junior consultants because they pass through three stages. Okay? I put this in front, you can study that. Now the same model, instead of these stages here, I'm going to use a delay function in VenSim. So I open, I call it HR. HR means human resources. Human resources model 2, part 2. This is the same thing as the previous one. The same thing as the previous one in terms of the total problem. I still have the hiring. They still are on a training course and they pass it after 1 year. But now when they become junior consultants, I don't look at the details of the intermediate stages. I just put a delay function of all the three in between. And then I get the same result. I don't get information about what happens in between, because I don't have the variables first and second intermediate stage. I am not interested in them. Yes, I'm interested in the guys entering the company and becoming seniors. So if you look at the equations here, there you see delay 3. So this is a flow, and this flow is made a third order delay of this flow here. So that is what the equation is, delay 3 of passing course. And then there is the average time to become senior consultant. So there are two ways of speaking about that, which are the same. This flow, promotion to senior consultants, is a third order delay of this. But by the same logic, the stock senior consultants is a third order delay of that. Whereas passing course is a fixed delay of hiring. There you see, delay fix, and so on. So also this I will put in front of, and you can look at the details. And with this, I have reviewed the question of delays. I started last time, last week. I gave you today plenty of occasions to see at examples and so on. And now we have to continue with the course. Final questions? Okay. Then, no questions. These were the delays and so on. All these things are abbreviated here. And you see, for instance, something similar to what I show you here and so on. So the details are there, and we are going to use this in different equations. The next things you can read, they are not so important. Subscript is to advance. Sharing data is to advance. The choosing the appropriate dimension algorithm, we had that. Remember, in front of it is which chapters here that are relevant. This you should read, because if you are creating applications for users, then you would like how to use that, and that's where you put sliders and windows and things like this, using the control tool. Okay. This is important. Model verification, validation, and testing. There are three names here. And they have slightly different meanings, or actually they have different meanings, and all three are important. So let's start with verification. In verification, your question is this painting that I'm producing here, made the model, does this represent the reality that I want to describe? So in order to do that, you must to make sure that the diagrams that you put there, the variables you put there, correspond to the problem. That's what it is. And if you are the modeler, well, you can do a lot of things to verify that your model is. You have to read the problem very carefully. You have to check that you are putting everything that is relevant there. You have to check that you are not putting other things that shouldn't be there, and so on and so on. But let's change now the stance and suppose that you are working now for somebody who is paying you to do the work. You are in a company, you are working for the company. Or you are a consultant. Accenture has engaged you. They have heard you are very good in system dynamics, so they are going to pay you a lot. They pay a lot for good modelers. And now you will be working with clients. The clients come to you and say, I have a problem, and they tell a lot of things. And from what you hear, and there are processes for how to do that, sometimes you work in teams, in so-called group model building, you have to transform all these things to a neat model that captures the essence of the problem. And now, how do you check that your understanding of the problem corresponds to the problems that the clients have? So you have a meeting with them, and then you go home or to your office and work with that for 1 week or whatever. You are not all the time working with a client, because That cannot be. They have other things to do. They told you, that's my problem, please solve it, we pay you a lot. A good consultant can charge perhaps 3,000 crowns an hour or something like this, or rather his company charts. So you have been with them for one day, they have paid perhaps 30,000 crowns to the consulting company, and now you work with that for a while and you have a model. And now you have to find out, is my model describing their problem? The problem you have is the distance. You are an expert in fencing, in making models. Your clients don't know fencing, and you cannot teach them a course in system dynamics. So you have to communicate across this difference in understanding. And that's where the challenge is. One way of doing that is high level. Break the problem you model in different parts and talk to them as to the different parts. So one part is perhaps about human resources, another one is about project management and so on. So you talk from the top to bottom and first make sure I have the different sections that I need for this problem, and then you can go down and so on, and you can ask, do I connect these variables correctly and things like this. So that is what it tells you here. For the time being, this is not meant to make you an expert. Rather, I am explaining you as to what is necessary if you are to model for clients. Okay? So, next step. Actually, I could blow this up. So, the next step is validation. Validation is actually about the numbers and the equations. And what you actually are looking for is not whether the model is right or wrong. Remember, all models are by necessity wrong, in the sense they are not the same as the reality. The model should be much simpler than reality. So in the model there will be many things missing that they are in reality. But they should be things that are not important for the problem. So the goal with your model is it should help your client. It should be useful for the client. It should provide enlightenment, answers, information that helps your client to solve the problem. But then one of the things you have typically, and we spoke about last time, is you have some data that you want to reproduce, historical data about the behavior of the variables. Perhaps you have also some data that is how the problem should behave when it is solved. So instead of so many security incidents and so, we would like to have that. So you put this in order to find the direction in which how to solve the problem. And that's what we call the reference behavior. The reference behavior is the historical data that you have, and perhaps the experiences you have done by changing things. They are also historical data. Policies that you have tried that fail. And then finally, the kind of behavior that you want to have. How it should be when you have solved the problem. And that is what allows you to validate your model. It should be able to reproduce the historical data that you have, and if you change, make decisions, the model allows you to make decisions like invest in this or train that or whatever, all the things that you have in the model, then you should be able to show that yes, indeed, that seems to help. The advantage for the client is instead of doing the experiment in real resources that cost perhaps tens of millions, perhaps by engaging you it costs then 200,000 or 300,000 only. The experience shows there is typically a relation 1 to 200. For every 1,000 crowns that they pay you to make a model, they get 200 times as much in terms of saving if you are a good modeler. So if they want to save 200 millions, they should spend 1 million crowns in a good model. That's the rough order, based on experience, and assuming that you have good modelers. Okay? And in doing model validation, there are a number of things that you should do, because you should also test for extreme conditions. For extreme conditions, you know what happens. So for instance, if there are no security incidents, then you shouldn't have downtimes from attacks. If your model has no security incidents and still has trouble with security, something is fishy. So there are a number of extreme conditions. And if you have a lot of security incidents, you have a more stress system. So there are a number of things that are extreme conditions that you can test. Another thing that you do is to calibrate. VenSim has a method for calibrating automatically. You have your model, you have the reference behavior, and you can tell VenSim iterate and try to match the reference behavior. And it tries, and after a while, it shows you the best that can achieve. If you really are able to achieve everything that is there, then it's a nice model. It's not the only thing that it should be, because it should match the reference behavior for the right reasons, not just because you have a lot of parameters that can be adjusted. If you have, it says with sufficient number of parameters, you can curve fit an elephant. Okay? Put a mathematical function with 10,000 unknowns and say reproduce an elephant, and then it goes for several months. In the end, you get the elephant there. But this curve fitting is not illuminating. You don't learn anything. It's just pure mathematics without any meaning. So parameter calibration, yes, but you should also defend, and that's what the verification and so on has done, that it is for the right reasons. Then you can test sensitivity. That is what happens if you change some parameter. If small changes in sensitivity in a parameter lead to huge changes, you better explain that it is reasonable. It can be true. In fact, when something is very sensitive, that means two things. One thing is that it can be trouble for you, because a little change in that, you better control that parameter, otherwise it can be havoc. But on the other hand, it means that you have a very economical way of twisting the system. Consider a huge tanker, oil tanker. They can be 500 meters long. Consider how to change the course of the tanker. If you don't know hydrodynamics, you will think, oof, that must be very, very difficult, because that's a very heavy object. Heavy object means I have to put a lot of force. Fortunately not, because the tanker is very sensitive to the position of the rudder. A little change in the rudder, which doesn't demand much force. Of course, you'd need engines in a tanker. But a little change in the position of the rudder can steer the course of the ship. So you have discovered that the navigation of a ship is very sensitive to something that you have back. And that was discovered very, very early by people sailing. By putting a rudder behind the boat and changing its direction, you could easily steer the course. The reason is it causes turbulence, it causes more pressure one side than the other, and it changes the course. So that's why we are interested in sensitivity testing, on the one hand, so as to prevent undesired changes, on the other hand, so as to control the behavior of the system by way of using those parameters to our advantage. And then historical testing and so on. And then you use test inputs, you do sensitivity analysis, you can use external tools, they can connect to VenSim. And then finally, what we mean by testing the model is experimenting. What if? Remember, you're trying to solve some problem. And then, instead of doing this in reality, which is very costly, suppose one of the policies that you say, your project management is not good because you have too many people, it's too crowded, they are too little effective, it's too difficult to manage, you have to fire 20% of the staff. Well, you better prove that this is a good idea in advance, because that's going to cause a lot of havoc there. And if it turns out it's wrong, then you are liable and so on. All the other way down, you need more people of this kind. This is very costly. To convince the company to do this, which is risky, they risk perhaps engaging 50 more people, and it turns out they are superfluous. That's a lot of problems. So you should have good arguments for that. And that's what the models allow you to do. So in the end, well, maybe it turns out your model is not good enough. Because your model is kind of a solution. And maybe you find out, no matter what changes I make, the solution is not good enough. Then you will have to go back and propose a different way of dealing with the problem, with different structures, different relations, a reorganization and so on. But all of this, if it is a good modeler, can be done for less than 1%, for about half of the percent that it will cost in doing it in real life. And it is much faster, because developing a simulation model can be a matter of weeks or months. Whereas if you do the experiment, in reality, we have delays, and it may take 5 years until you see the outcome. One of the nice things about simulations model is that you simulate it, and in a microsecond, you can see what could happen in 5 years or 10 years from now. Okay? So what you want at the end is a model that should be robust. It should not be so you make a small change and the whole thing breaks down. It should be working all kinds of different situations for different scenarios. Should be complete, nothing lacking. Should be well tested. And it should be useful for the business that you have developed. Then it should be credible. You never will sell a solution, a model, by coming here and say, this is my crystal ball, let's ask what he says, what is going to happen tomorrow. They don't believe you. So how do we make the model credible? By working together with your clients. First, by listening to the problems and showing that you are listening and so on, and sketching some things. Then by coming back with a draft and verifying it with them, probably you have to do it several times, they will say, no, we have to change this and so on. Then by validating it with them, then by testing it with them, you have to involve them. You cannot involve them all the time, because their time must be employed in the organization what they do. So you have to find the right amount to involve them, and you have to do it in the right way. This is things that you cannot learn in class. But if you, for instance, said, after this class, oh, I want to know more about system dynamics, okay, there are books, there are tools, there are courses, and whatever. You could even decide, that was fun, I want to take a master. After I finish in security, I can afford that, my parents are rich or whatever, or I can do it part-time. And then the University of Bergen has a master in system dynamics. So there are different ways, and there are courses. I've given workshops for different companies, for Telenor, for instance, for Statoil and so on, modeling, also in abroad, for British Telecom, for BP exploration, and so on, in Denmark, in Germany, I've given in the UK, in Sweden, and so on. They are typically 3-day courses, and so on. Do you need, in Germany, you know the company SAP? You know that one? It's a very big company, deliver enterprise solution systems. Yes, I've been there. I've trained them, because the tool that I co-developed, PowerSim, the company PowerSim here, is used by SAP. It is an integrated part of the systems as well. And so I have given courses to SAP guys in Germany. Okay? So that much sensitivity analysis, you can read it. Then we go to the end, modeling info cases. All this you can read what comes now. To the extent that I indicated in front of. Okay. Okay. We are going to spend the last time here in considering this problem, a problem from real life. We are speaking about a software vulnerability. And what happens when it is discovered? Is somebody banking there? No. What happens when it is discovered? What happens when it is exploited? And how is it fixed? This has been studied by staff at CERT, which is part of the Carnegie Mellon University, by Arbor, Fithen and McHugh, and published as a case analysis. And there are several vulnerabilities here. What you see here is a timeline starting the first quarter of 1996, and it goes through until the end of 1998. So 96, 97, 98, 3 years. And then you see, let's go back. We see three lines here. The red one says this vulnerability was discovered in the second quarter of 1996. Even if it's all, it is still the same story. Nothing much has changed. So this case here is still interesting to learn. So the vulnerability was discovered in the first quarter of 1996, and it was corrected just a few weeks later. What does it mean, corrected? Well, it means the vulnerability, which is a bug in the software, was fixed by either the developers or people that engaged that. So they knew that's back in the problem, they created a patch. So within weeks, they had the patch, which was the solution. But, and that's the interesting story here, the problems among the users continued for about 3 years, with some tops here and downs. The third line is a very interesting one. Until then, the attacks, they were manual. So the hackers, they knew there was a vulnerability, they knew how the vulnerability looked like, they created an attack and used it. At that time, the hackers, they were doing that for fun. They were boys, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, who were perhaps studying at university and used this as a kind of a training. But then, it was not in the quarter, it was in the month. In the second month, it was discovered very quickly. So, 4 months later, in the 6 months, in June 1996, somebody created a script. If you have a script, then, and it's put in the web, then you download it, you don't need to program, just use it to attack. And as you would expect, the moment this occurred, a lot of people who didn't know how to do it manually could just download the script, attack, and you see an explosion. Why do we see bars rather than a continuous curve? Because these are reports. So CERT and Pittsburgh, which are doing reporting with this thing, they are getting emails, they are getting phone calls, hey, we were attacked. Another, hey, we were attacked. When? Oh, okay. So they are plotting here how many reports they got in some months. So they got few reports in June, more reports in July, a lot of reports in August, less in September and so on. Does it mean there were less attacks? Not necessarily, because you don't know when people report. In my past, in the 80s, I was working with models of the AIDS epidemic. I was one of the first people who developed simulation models for how this will be. It was a new epidemic then. It was discovered in the early 80s. And a few years later, I was one of the first in the world who developed models for that. We depended on data for different countries. I come from Spain, and the reports were very unreliable, and they came very late. In Italy, even worse. In some countries in Africa, you couldn't rely. Everybody knew that the people were dying like flies, but the reports say that there was one HIV or AIDS sick in Congo or whatever. And the doctors there, you phone to the hospitals there and tell people are coming and dying in the beds and so from AIDS and so on. So they didn't have one, they didn't have 10, they didn't have 100, they didn't have thousands, they have tens of thousands and so on. But the report, they were incomplete and they came very late. In Switzerland, perfect. Everything was perfect. Very well reported, they have everything was notified. It depended on a lot of factors. For instance, in Switzerland, they told to the doctors, we pay you for reporting. Of course, they are spending the time there. In Spain, they didn't pay. So, why should I do that? The other thing is, in Spain, it was much less accepted that you could be homosexual or drug addict. So, when people got AIDS, the family said, please put something else as cause of the death. So they put pneumonia or whatever. And it wasn't even a lie, because you don't die from AIDS directly. AIDS it destroys your immune system. So you die from cancer, from pneumonia, from all kind of cults, fungi infection to the liver and so on and so on. So, therefore, the reports, they are not the same as what happened. You have delays, you have perceptions of information, all kind of things. You have incomplete information and so on. So this is not what it was. So the next step, after a break, we are going to take a break now, will be to decide what kind of data are we using. This rough data as it is there, or should we rather smooth it in some way to better represent what it comes. That's the kind of things that you have to do as a modeler. You have also to interpret the data, not just rely on this as phase data, because there can be a lot of factors that make it necessary to this. Okay, any questions? But here, yes, the interesting observation, the final, there was a small amount of activity prior to the scripting of this vulnerability. It was called a PHF vulnerability. Don't ask me why it was called PHF. You had a vast majority of intrusions after the scripting. And you have a very long time horizon, 2 years or even more, actually 3 years. And then I will explain this curve in the next one. Okay, we take a break, 15 minutes. You think this is interesting? Yeah. Like it? Okay.